Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Granta Raja Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Goprimanandi. So tonight we'll continue with chapter 9, verses 14 to 29, which is the second half of chapter 9. We've already begun chapter 9 last week. We're hearing about the appearance of Mohini Murti, which was spoken of in the last verse of chapter 8, which we covered last night. And then we hear about how she has entered into the assembly of the Devatas and the demons, and she's bewildering the demons. And now we'll hear about the Asura as it continues. Okay, so we begin with verse number 14. The demigods and demons then observed a fast. After bathing, they offered clarified butter and oblations into the fire and gave charity to the cows and to the brahmanas and members of the other orders of society, namely the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras, who were all awarded as they deserved. Thereafter, the demigods and demons performed ritualistic ceremonies under the directions of the Brahmanas. Then they dressed themselves with new garments according to their own choice, decorated their bodies with ornaments, and sat facing east on seats made of pusha grass. Jogesh,
Jogesh. The Vedas enjoin that for every ritualistic ceremony, one must first become clean by bathing either in the water of the Ganges or Yamuna or in the sea. And then one may perform the ritualistic ceremony and offer clarified butter into the fire. In this verse, the words Paridhaya Athani are especially significant. A sannyasi or a person about to perform a ritualistic ceremony should not dress himself in a clothing sown with a needle.
Thank you. Any points here?
So we speak of the rules and regulations, the procedure of what needs to be done. The needle, the condition of the cloth.
Yeah. Any other points? Anything else?
Pretty much, when we normally have a shower, we normally say it actually makes everyone stay three times towards bathing and three times Ganga, Ganga, Ganga. That before actually even having a shower and while having a shower. And he's made that a ritualistic habit that it has to be done, and that's it.
Anything else? That's what it says here. You don't like the sea?
Sometimes you go to sea and then you come back and shall take a shower.
Yeah, because there's salt water. So, yeah, I don't know why it says bathe in the ocean. I mean, bathe in the ocean, but then generally we use fresh water to cleanse the salt off. So. Any other points?
Yeah. Lord Vishnu, we have got to be in the mode of cooking. And so we have got to take part and do of the cleanliness, so that's a part of mode of cooking.
So Srila Prabhupada says, there are rules, they are small rules, and if you do not follow them, where is the proof that you love Krishna? Well, there are so many rules which we have to follow. Now, Srila Prabhupada said that if I told you all the rules, you would faint. Because there's so many rules and regulations. Prabhupada just gave us the essential ones, or the basic ones. But they have meaning, and they have purpose. And the main purpose of following all these rules and regulations is to purify the consciousness, so that we can approach Krishna in a purified state of consciousness. So very important elements are given here. These are elements which are part of the Vedic culture. The first thing which is mentioned is that they observe the fast. Now Srila Prabhupada says devotees should fast once a week or on every Ekadashi. Fasting is good for the consciousness. It's also good for the health. When Prabhupada first went to India in 1970, and he took the first 30 or 40 devotees, devotees were getting sick all the time, the Western devotees. So they had to continuously come to Prabhupada to get money for medicine. And Prabhupada became disturbed because he said, they're spending all of my money on medicine. So then Prabhupada said to them, from now on, if they come and ask for money for medicine, first they have to fast for 3 days. And if they're still sick, then I will give them money. So fasting is good for the health because it cleanses the body. It cleanses the intestinal tract, and it cleanses the mind also. It makes the mind clear. When you fast, quite often people find that they have problems concentrating, or their memory is slow, or their brain does not work quickly. A lot of that time is just because we eat too much. When you fast, you see the mind becomes clear. So fasting is recommended in general. In general. It says that once you're over the age of 80, or under the age of 8, you don't need to fast. Even on a Ekadashi in these things, you don't need to follow all the strict fasts. But when you are able, and you have good health, fasting is good on a regular basis. When I was a young devotee, when I was in my 20s, I couldn't fast. It was too difficult. Only on, like, you know, Janmashtami and Gopanim, but not in general. But now I fast regularly. You know, I try to fast once a week or every second week, or as often as I can. And it's good because it cleanses the mind, good for the body. It gives the body a break, like that. Everything needs, our organs need a break. The liver is working all the time, 365 days a year. So if you give the liver a break, and the liver is the largest organ in the body, practically, if you give it a break, then it has time to regenerate and get its power back, because it's just working. It's like us, if we go to work 7 days a week, then we'll, but our body, our organs are working practically every day of the week, so it's good if you give them a break. So fasting is recommended, and Prabhupada encouraged us to fast once a week or every second week, and especially on days like Ekadashi, we should do some fasting, at least from grains and beans, but if you can do more, that's good. And on the fasting days, the appearance days of the Acharyas and the Lord, like that. So fasting is for purification of consciousness. It purifies the consciousness. It's also an austerity. And as Krishna says in the 18th chapter of the Gita, sacrifice, austerity, and charity purify even great souls. So we should do austerity, voluntary austerity. Now austerity is to fast so that we can increase our hearing and chanting on those days that we are doing the fasting. Just like traditionally you would fast on a Ekadashi. Why do you fast on a Ekadashi? Then you have more time for hearing and chanting. It's like on Janmashtami, we don't have to eat and then we can just serve all day. So it's beneficial. That's why Prabhupada actually says sannyasis should decrease their eating and sleeping. And you see the Six Goswamis of Vrindavan, the advanced devotees, they minimize their eating and their sleeping. That is good for spiritual life. So we should do some austerity, but not too much austerity, that we become disturbed in our consciousness, but as much as we can do naturally. Now, what is the second principle which is mentioned? For purification, they took bath. Srila Prabhupada said that the Krishna consciousness movement will develop a revolution in cleanliness. Devotees are known for being revolutionarily clean. Devotees are known for being clean. Quite often people comment on this. So Prabhupada says it is a revolution in cleanliness. We should bathe regularly. So it says the sannyasis, they should bathe 3 times a day to keep their consciousness pure. Just like if you find it hard to stay awake in class, then go and take a bath. And wake yourself up. Or sprinkle some water on your face. This will also keep you awake. And Prabhupada said, it says that sannyasis should bathe 3 times a day, the grihasthas 2 times a day. That should be the basic principle. And it says like brahmacharis at least 1 times a day. But it should be more than that. So bathing also cleanses the consciousness. It purifies the consciousness. So it is necessary. When you do deity worship especially, Prabhupada says, the 2 most important things are cleanliness and punctuality. So you must be clean. Last year we did a seminar on cleanliness, which the devotees put on YouTube. Last time I heard, quite a few months ago, there's like 300 views or something. A lot of people, because people want to learn about what is cleanliness in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was emphatic that we become clean in Krishna consciousness. So we have to learn, what does it mean? So it means we have to take bath regularly. And when you take bath, it is recommended, you should never have hot shower, but warm water. And then you should always finish on cool or cold, as much as you can. Because the cold water, it awakens the subtle body. And it's also good for the gross body, very good for the health. Your immune system gets built up by having cold bath. So it's good for the health. It makes you stronger, and it makes you, during winter, able to resist colds and flus and things like that easier. So it is very good. Just like the temple president of the new Govardhan farm, Ajita Prabhu, he's never had a warm shower in his life. And he's 50 years old. Even when he comes to Melbourne, that's cool, he'll always have a cold shower. Like that. And practically never gets sick. Because he just has like cold water. Doesn't even use the hot tap. I mean, it's easier up there, but even when he comes down here, I've seen that he takes. Even when we lived in Cessnock, and we had a farm in Cessnock, and it's very cold there. I remember in winter, and he still has cold bath. So it is good for the system to bathe regularly and to keep yourself clean, and also to finish with cool water. And then what is the next item which is mentioned? So they fasted, they took bath, right? And then they gave charity. Offer clarified butter and oblation. So that's yajna. So Krishna says in the 18th chapter of Gita, do charity, do yajna, and do austerity. So this is what they're doing, because it purifies the consciousness. Especially grihasthas should give charity. It purifies your consciousness. Right? If a grihastha doesn't give charity, then the consciousness becomes full of greed. Right? So how do you defeat greed? And give charity. Like that. And that way you overcome your desire to accumulate, and you overcome your desire for attachment. So a brahmana, he gives charity. And he only keeps enough to live simply. Like that. Devotees should not live in poverty, but they should live like middle class. Like that. Not become overly opulent, but not live too much in poverty either. Especially for our preaching, if we're too rich, people become envious of us, and if we're too poor, no one will be attracted. They think that's too austere. So we should just be middle class, and it's also good for our consciousness to be like that as well. And then it is mentioned they gave charity to the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Sudras. Thereafter the demigods and demons perform ritualistic ceremonies under the directions of the Brahmanas. Then they dressed themselves with new garments according to their own choice, decorated their bodies with ornaments, and sat facing east on seats made of kusha grass. So they dressed themselves with new garments. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, which were not sewn by the needle. So when we do the deity worship, we should wear clothes which are not sewn by the needle. That's why you see the brahmanas, we just wear dhoti and we wear chadar. You don't wear kurta onto the altar. Traditionally women would not go onto the altar. These days they do, so they have to wear choli and like that, which is sewn by the needle. But the basic principles, we should be simple. When you do religious activity, you should dress very simply. Good for the consciousness. Devotees should not become carried away with what they wear, or what their hairstyle is like, or what type of glasses they're wearing, or shoes, or should not become carried away by these things. But should try to live as simple as possible. Right? Not have too many saris.
So Rupa Goswami says in terms of our wealth,
50% we should give to the Krishna consciousness movement, 25% you should give to the family, and 25% you should keep for emergencies. So that should be our basic principle. Very difficult to do in this day and age, to give 50% to ISKCON. If you give 50% to ISKCON, then you have to move into the brahmachari ashram, because you won't be able to pay your rent. But you should give something to ISKCON, 10% or something. Or if you're rich, give 50%. Any other points? What's the question?
Why is the restriction of putting on clothes sewn with the needle?
Because it makes you feel more simple, more humble.
I was reading a picture and Gaurang Prabhu was mentioning that actually when we pay obeisances to the Lord, there should be, for the men, there should be no clothes on the first part of the body. So otherwise it said that one has to take, be born as a leper for 45 days or something.
You should have told me that before. What hope do I have?
All of us.
All of us. Next lifetime we will be lepers. Neither can I. So it's okay. If I don't understand it, then you won't understand it either. Any other points?
Here, the demigods and the demons both observe the fasting and ritualistic activities. Only demons don't follow all these rules and regulations. So, why all of a sudden, yes?
Because they're trying to impress a woman. Now, do you understand everything? You see, you know, when someone is engaged, right, they start going out on Harinam. Right, they go to Mangaladi every day. You know, when you're about to get married, everyone gets very, you know, pucker. Come to the temple all the time. Right, always chanting their japa very seriously. But after you get married, then everything just goes back down to its normal level. But when you're trying to impress a woman, or the woman's trying to impress the man, then they become very, you know, very pucker. So demons are doing it because there's a motivation there. Normally they probably wouldn't take all this so seriously, but... Anything else?
Could it be that because they were the sons of pastor?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're cultured people. They're very well trained, cultured people, so...
If that is the case, the pastime of Daksha or the sons of Ravana, where they are so learned, and they do jagyas as well, and they do follow all the ritualistic things except that their mind is out of Krishna. So, should I understand that they also do, or at that age, they would be following those ritualistic activities, and it's just because of the Kali, Amadabha.
That we don't do them now? Is that what you're asking?
My actual question is, the actual so-called demons like Ravana or whoever it is, they were following the religious activities. So there's no question that they are not following.
So what's your point?
Point is they were following even in those days, in those ages.
So is it a question or a comment?
No, I think he wants to know.
No, just let him answer. Is it a question or a comment?
It's a comment.
Okay, no problem. Good.
What I wanted to know from that question is whether it is because of the effect of Kali
Yuga
that they are not following
you
and they were following
you
before.
Yeah. Kali Yuga ruins everything.
Mm. How do you give charity to cows?
You give them golden ornaments, golden ornaments, decorations,
yeah.
Like that.
Feed them.
Yeah, feed them, like that.
Give money for cow protection.
Yeah, build goshalas and different things. O King, as the demigods and demons sat facing east in an arena fully decorated with flower garlands and lamps and fragrant with the smoke of incense, that woman, dressed in a most beautiful sari, her anchor bells tinkling, entered the arena, walking very slowly because of her big, low hips. Her eyes were restless due to youthful pride. Her breasts were like water jugs. Her thighs resembled the trunks of elephants, and she carried a water pot in her hand. Her attractive nose and cheeks and her ears, adorned with golden earrings, made her face very beautiful. As she moved, her sari's border on her breasts moved slightly aside. Then the demigods and demons saw these beautiful features of Mohini Murti, who was glancing at them and slightly smiling. They were all completely enchanted. So, Jagannath Ram Prabhu.
So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarked that here that Mohini Murti is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a feminine form, and that the Goddess of Fortune is her associate. This form, assumed by the personality of Godhead, challenged the Goddess of Fortune. The Goddess of Fortune is beautiful, but if the Lord accepts the form of a woman, he surpasses the Goddess of Fortune in beauty. It's not that the Goddess of Fortune is female, but the most beautiful. The Lord is so beautiful that he can excel any beautiful goddess of fortune, but assuming a female form.
Mm. So what are the points?
Krishna is most beautiful, it doesn't matter. Male form, female form. Attracts everybody. All attractive.
Any other points?
Not get attracted towards the opposite sex, as Prabhupada says.
Don't get attracted towards the opposite sex.
Here again, we could see that they are...
Don't get attracted to the opposite sex. So what happened to you? Easy to say it, but not easy to do it.
Yes.
Any other points?
Goddess Lakshmi is really beautiful.
Lakshmi is beautiful. But when
but one has to take the form of a lady to become one of
the sexes. So Narayan in the form of a woman is even more beautiful than Lakshmi.
Yes.
So Mohini Murti is even more beautiful than Lakshmi. So then the question is, who is more beautiful, Radha or Krishna?
I think Radha.
You think Radha?
Yes.
Okay. So who is more beautiful, Radha or Krishna?
Krishna
is Madan Mohan, but Radha is Madan Mohan. She has to be more beautiful. So who is more beautiful, Radha or Krishna? Because Narayan is more beautiful than Lakshmi, that's what's being said. But who is more beautiful, Radha or Krishna?
Both are one.
A lot of things coming out of the back row tonight. Yeah, so they're equal. Radha and Krishna are equal. Radha is the most beautiful girl, and Krishna is the most beautiful man. So that is, they are completely equal. In all respects, they're perfectly suitable to each other. Only Radha is completely able to satisfy Krishna, and only Krishna is able to completely satisfy Radha. So that is the absolute truth, Radha Krishna combined. But when Krishna becomes Narayan, Narayan is more beautiful than Lakshmi. Why did he take the form of a lady?
Yes.
To bewilder the demons.
But he could have, if he was more beautiful, then he could have discussion to men. More, you know, very beautiful.
Yeah,
but
then the demons wouldn't be attracted to him. Men aren't attracted to men.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is...
Oh, God.
If he is beautiful, then he's...
You know when Prabhupada said simple for the simple? So why don't we just keep it simple?
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Demons always think of enjoyment, so they wouldn't know what to do with Krishna and they have to do with the woman.
Yeah, that's why I took the form of a woman, because it bewildered the demons. If you took the form of a man, they wouldn't be as attracted. They would be envious. Okay. Demons are by nature crooked like snakes. Therefore, to distribute a share of the nectar to them was not at all feasible, since this would be as dangerous as supplying milk to a snake. Considering this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never falls down, did not deliver a share of nectar to the demons. Jumuna Lila. Yeah. What's your name?
Okay. The snake is very crooked and envious, and so also is a person like a demon. Mantra Shakti Vasha Sarpa Khala Kena Nivaryate. One can bring a snake under control with mantra, cross and trust. But an envious and crooked person cannot be brought under control by any means. Considering this logic, the Supreme Personality of Godhead thought it unwise to distribute
nectar
to the demons. Okay, any points? The demons
think they are smarter, knowledge smarter than anyone. Yeah, Krishna says in Gita, of cheaters, I am the cheat. Yeah, he bewildered everyone. Any other points?
No remedy for the envious.
The only way to deal with an envious person is to punish them. And unfortunately, in this day and age, because the government's now sentimental, they don't punish those who are envious. and the world is full of problems. But if someone is envious, they must be punished. That's why, even when Prabhupada was in Mayapur with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was on the balcony, he looked down, he saw the cobra, a snake. He said, kill him immediately. And Prabhupada at the time, Prabhupada was confused. Why did the guru order that the snake be killed? But then later he read in the Bhagavatam that a snake is so envious that he will bite even an envious, an innocent person. So someone who is envious, he must be chastised. He must be corrected. Otherwise his envy will increase. As it says, if you give milk to the serpent, then they will increase. So if they had given the nectar to the demons, they would have used the nectar for the wrong purpose. They would have become stronger and they would have done more evil or more negative things for the world. So immediately they must be corrected. Even it says in the Vedic culture, a shudra doesn't mean a demon, but it means a lower class person, he should never be given money, wealth, and he should never be given a conveyance or a car. You see, these days in Kali Yuga, all the shudras, Kalo Sudra or Sambhav, right? Everyone in Kali Yuga is Sudra or less. Everyone has a car and they get themselves into so many problems. But in the Vedic time, the Sudras are never given cars and they're never given money either. They were just given some leftovers from the higher classes. That was their position. So someone who's envious, he should not be given too much facility because he doesn't know how to use it. And an envious person will just use it for negative things. Any points? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Mohini Murti, the Master of the Universe, arranged separate lines of sitting places and seated the demigods and demons according to their positions. Taking the container of nectar in her hands, she first approached the demons, satisfied them with sweet words, and thus cheated them of their share of the nectar. Then she administered the nectar to the demigods, who were sitting at a distant place, to make them free from invalidity, old age, and death.
Mohini Murti, the personality of Godhead, gave the demigods seats at a distance. Then she approached the demons and spoke with them very graciously, so that they thought themselves very fortunate to talk with her. Since Mohini Murti had seated the demigods at a distant place, the demons thought that the demigods would get only the little of nectar, and that Mohini Murti was so pleased with the demons that she would give the demons all the nectar. The words Vachana Upas Charya indicate that the Lord's whole policy was to cheat the demons simply by speaking sweet words. The Lord's intention was to distribute the nectar only to the demigods.
Any points? Any other points?
Lord knows how to deliver demons.
What's
that? Lord knows how to deliver.
Anything else?
Demons, they always think how to squeeze enjoyment from anything. And the demigods always try to serve Krishna, and on the end, demigods, those who don't think about their direct enjoyment, they still get it. Krishna
and direct demons. So, we better
think, serve Krishna, we will think of our needs and what's good for us, than thinking of demons, what we need and what is good for us.
Good. Any other points?
Krishna is very merciful in one sense that he is actually giving whatever one actually is supposed to have. In fact, he is helping the demons by not giving them the nectar which they will actually destroy or actually
things worse for the human.
Yeah, this is good parenting. If you give the child something which is not good for them, then that's not good parenting. So the Lord understands what is best for everyone, so he gives everyone according to what they need, not what they want. If Krishna gives you everything you want, you'll never leave the material world. So he just gives us what we need so that we can become gradually detached from the material energy. Now, what is being warned here, and this is the 8th canto, we're almost in the 10th canto, and this will come up again at the end of the 9th canto, before we get to the 10th canto. We have to be very careful about associating with the opposite sex, because that is the cause of bondage in the material world. Right? From the lowest planet in the material world up to Swargaloka, which is above Earth, everyone is bewildered by sex life. Only those in the higher planetary systems have overcome sex desire. Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satchaloka. They are somewhat beyond sex desire. They've transcended. But everyone else in the material world, it is all based on this one point. And it ruins your spiritual life. Prabhupada says that sense gratification and spiritual advancement go ill together. You can't have both. You can't have sex life and spiritual life. I mean, there are some license which is given, that is called Grihastha Ashram. You can associate with the opposite sex to a degree in order to have children and to have some association with the opposite sex, but it is limited. It is a license, which means there is some restriction there. It is not unlimited. And in that way we become gradually purified from the desire to enjoy separate from Krishna. But even still, Prabhupada says that the attachment to the opposite sex, that is the basis of material existence. The Bhagavad Gita has said this again and again and again. Kapila Dev's teachings, the beginning of the second canto, Rishabh Dev's teachings in the fifth canto, they all point to this point again and again and again. We must be very cautious when dealing with the opposite sex. And that's why three of the ashrams restrict association with the opposite sex. Only one ashram you're allowed to associate. But the other three, restriction is given. Because sex life is the basis of material existence. And until you transcend, you can't go back to the spiritual world. So, any points?
In the translation, we just said that it is free from the old age and death, right? For this amrita, this nectar.
Yep.
But I do remember we were having a chat yesterday. I mean, you were instructing us that it is not death, but it will be a long life. I couldn't recollect the verse or that verse, but you said this nectar will just give the long life, but we will not overcome the death. But here, what is saying that death is your right? How can we reconcile?
There's only one person in this room who can answer your question. Not me. When it says overcomes death, it doesn't mean completely overcome death, but it means they can live a very long life. That's all it means. It's not literal, because everyone in the material world has to die. So it doesn't mean you drink amrita and you live forever, but it means it increases your life. The demigods live for 10,000 years. Right? Long life. It says on the moon planet that one day up there is equal to 6 months here. So a very long life, but it is not immortal. Just makes your life, they're already powerful, but it just makes you more powerful, stronger. Just makes you live forever. Very high standard of living. That's all. Okay. O king, since the demons had promised to accept whatever the woman did, whether just or unjust, now to keep this promise, to show their equilibrium and to save themselves from fighting with the woman, they remained silent. The demons had developed affection for Mohini Murti and a kind of faith in her, and they were afraid of disturbing their relationship. Therefore they showed respect and honor to her words, and they did not say anything that might disturb their friendship with her. So, Mahatma Prabhu?
The demons were so captivated by the tricks and friendly words of Mahinimurti that although the demigod was served first, the demons were pacified merely by sweet words. The Lord said to the demons, "The demigods are very miserly and are excessively anxious to take the nectar first. So let them have it first. Since you are not like them, you can wait a little longer. You are all heroes and are so pleased with me, it is better for you to wait until after the demigods drink."
So what are the points?
So the Lord pacified the demons by sweet words and tricked them, and then
give
the nectar to the demigods.
Yep. So Lord Chaitanya says in Shikshastika, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim Kavitam. Sundarim means?
Beautiful.
Woman.
Woman. Yeah, beautiful woman. Kavitam means?
Words.
Poetry. Kavita. So, poetry of the beautiful woman. There's nothing more bewildering in this world than to hear sweet words from the opposite sex. When the opposite sex speaks very sweetly to you, there is nothing which is more bewildering. So how did the Lord bewilder the demons? He just spoke very sweetly to them. The beautiful woman speaking very sweetly, and the demons were completely captivated. They would do anything. I mean, if you analyze the situation, how long have they known her for? Right, they just met her, literally. And what have they got in their possession? Right, the most valuable thing in the universe. Right, they've just churned the entire milk ocean in enough of plants, and they've just got this, you know, most valuable possession in the whole universe. Everyone wants it. And they meet this girl for a couple of minutes, and they give her the pot, and they say, "Now you work out what to do. You know, you're the best person to work out what to do with the pot. So you work it out. We'll do whatever you want." I mean, it's insanity. None of us would do that. Imagine if you had a bag, $10,000 in a bag, right? And you meet some girl after a couple of minutes, you just give her the bag and say, "Now you do whatever you want. Just tell us what to do." Right? It's completely insane. But that is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. This is the potency of dealing with the opposite sex. So if you want to make advancement in spiritual life, you have to control your vegan. Vegan means your urges. That's why Rupa Goswami says, Bhacha vegan, Manasa Krodha vegan. He says you have to learn sense control. That is the first instruction in spiritual life. Otherwise you can't advance. That's why Rupa Goswami says, first you do this, then you'll advance in spiritual life. Otherwise, how do you progress? So the Bhagavatam is teaching us you have to make progress by controlling the senses and controlling the mind. And the nature of demoniac consciousness is there's no sense control, there's no mental control. And therefore, there is no advancement in spiritual life. They miss the point. When you have control of the senses and the mind, then you can progress. If you do not, you cannot progress. Now, Lord Brahma himself says that sweet speech is the most valuable gift that you can give to anyone. If someone comes to your home, as we were discussing last night or recently, Atithi Narayan means someone comes untimely to your house. It says, if you don't have anything to offer them, then just offer them a simple sitting place and some water. And even if you cannot do that, then offer them sweet words. Right? Sweet, and Lord Brahma says this, sweet speech is the most generous gift that someone can offer. So to speak very nicely to someone. And Mohinimurti, she was so expert, she spoke very perfectly to everyone and completely bewildered them. And you'll see, even someone that you don't like, when they speak to you very nicely, then you think, oh, they're okay. I know myself, some people who I really don't like very much, but when they speak to me very nicely, then you forget it all. So that is the potency of speech. Right? Speech creates wars, right? And creates quarrel. Right? If you look at all the quarrels in our lives, it all comes from something that we say to people. You say something the wrong way, you're having a bad day, right? Especially between the husband and wife. And you speak the wrong way and then like that. And if you speak nicely, then everything becomes very peaceful in life. So it's an important lesson that we need to learn, to speak nicely to people. Krishna says in the mode of goodness, speech in the mode of goodness is what? Truthful, beneficial, pleasing. Right? And according to Shastra. So any points? Okay. Now we'll learn a little bit about Vedic astronomy. O king, since the demons had promised to accept whatever the woman did, have I read that on?
Yeah.
Which one are we on? 24. Rahu, the demon who causes eclipses of the sun and moon, covered himself with the dress of a demigod and thus entered the assembly of the demigods and drank nectar without being detected by anyone, even the supreme personality of Godhead. The moon and the sun, however, because of permanent animosity towards Rahu, understood the situation, and Rahu was detected. Shukadev Prabhu, you like to read that?
Supreme Personality Godhead, Mohinimurti, was able to bewilder all the demons, but Rahu was so clever that he was not bewildered. Rahu could understand that Mohinimurti was dealing with demons, and therefore he changed his dress, disguised himself as a demigod, and sat down in the assembly of demigods. Here one may ask why the Supreme Personality could not detect Rahu. The reason is that the Lord wanted to show the effect of drinking nectar. This will be revealed in the following verse. Moon and the sun, however, were always alert in regard to Rahu. Thus the Rahu entered the assembly of demigods. Moon and the sun immediately detected him, and then Supreme Personality God also became aware of him.
So what are the points?
So that's after drinking the nectar, the becoming mortal. The Rahu is still there, alive.
Yeah, for while this universe exists, but not when the universe is destroyed. So this is teaching us the power of the Rahu planet. So all of these things are mentioned at the time of your birth, right? All the planets are situated in particular places, right? And they all have like a cosmic influence on your life. That's why at the time of birth, we can look at the person's chart and we can understand something about their personality and something about their life. So Rahu and Ketu and Saturn and Mars, they are called malefic planets, which means they predict to a certain extent negative things that will happen in our life. So we have to understand these things to an extent in our lives. Some of the gurus in our movement, they look at these things very carefully. They regularly get astrological calculations or forecasts to understand what is coming up. And it was mentioned in the end of the seventh canto that those who are conditioned by the modes of material nature in the Grihastha Ashram, they have to take notice of these things. In other words, it's good to start projects when the Jyotish is good. And days like Ashtami, which is tomorrow, right? Purnima, you know, certain days which are auspicious, it's good to start things on those days because you get added benefit and power. But if you start things on negative days, then you can have great difficulty. So Rahu, he always causes, not always, but quite often he can cause problems in our life. So we have to understand how these things work. Yeah. Even the sun and the moon, they become troubled to an extent by Rahu, because Rahu always attacks them. He attacks the moon and there is an eclipse, he attacks the sun and there is an eclipse. So, So he causes the sun and moon a certain amount of problems, so he will also cause us a certain amount of problems. Any points?
They are not bad. They are perfect. We are perfect at present. But they are there to be troubled. But they are this one. It is our fault to be. We can't blame them. It's true. We have to suffer. Anything else? Okay.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, using his disc, which was sharp like a razor, at once cut off Rahu's head. When Rahu's head was severed from his body, the body, being untouched by the nectar, could not survive. Rahu's head, however, having been touched by the nectar, became immortal. Thus Lord Brahma accepted Rahu's head as one of the planets. Since Rahu is an eternal enemy of the moon and the sun, he always tries to attack them on the nights of the full moon and the dark moon. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the best friend and well-wisher of the three worlds. Thus, when the demigods had almost finished drinking the nectar, the Lord, in the presence of all the demons, disclosed his original form. The place, the time, the cause, the purpose, the activity, and the ambition were all the same for both the demigods and the demons. But the demigods achieved one result and the demons another. Because the demigods are always under the shelter of the dust of the Lord's lotus feet, they could very easily drink the nectar and get its result. The demons, however, not having sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, were unable to achieve the result they desired. Sharada Rata, would you like to read it?
In Prabhupada Gita 4.11 it is said, Eyatamam Prabhupada Dham Dham Dham. The Supreme Personality Therefore is the Supreme Judge who rewards or punishes different persons according to their surrender unto his lotus feet. Therefore it can actually be seen that all those karmis and bhaktas may work in the same place, at the same time, with the same energy and with the same ambition, they achieve different results. The karmis transmigrate through different bodies in the cycle of birth and death, sometimes going upward and sometimes downward. They are suffering the results of their actions in the karma chakra, the cycle of birth and death. The devotee, however, because of fully surrendering at the lotus feet of God, are never backward in their attempts. Although eternally they work almost like the karmi, the devotees go back home, back to Godhead, and achieve success in every effort. The demons are at least have faith in their own endeavors. But although they work very hard day and night, they cannot get any more than their destiny. The devotees, however, can surpass the reactions of karma and achieve wonderful results even without effort. It is also said, Palena Parijaya. One success or defeat in any activity is understood by its result. There are many karmis in the race of devotees, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can detect their purpose. The karmis want to use the property of the Lord for their selfish gratification, but the devotee endeavors to use the Lord's property for God's service. Therefore, a devotee is always distinct from karmis, although the karmis may dress like devotees. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 3.9, Yagnartha karmano One who works for Lord Vishnu is free from this material world, and after giving up his body, he goes back home, back to Godhead. A karmi, however, although externally working like a devotee, is entangled in his non-devotional activities, and thus he suffers the divinations of material existence. Thus, from the results achieved by the karmis and devotees, one can understand the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who acts differently for karmis and jnanis than for the devotees. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ateva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakli Ashanta. The karmi is good, results and gratification. The jnani is to aspire for liberation of merging into the existence of the Supreme, and the yogi who fix material attractions and mystic power are all restless, and ultimately they are baffled. But the devotee who does not expect any personal benefit and who only ambitions and whose only ambition is to spread the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is blessed with all the special deserts of Bhakti Yoga without hard labor.
Any points?
So the Lord is happy with the devotee because he works with main purpose is to please the Lord. And so sometimes he gets the results very easily, but sometimes he has to work hard to get the results. But the demons, they are always just.
Any other points? Prabhupada is emphasizing this purport that whether you're a devotee or a non-devotee, you have to work hard. The demons and the demigods had to work equally as hard to churn the nectar from the ocean. But the demons, they got nothing at the end. So much hard work and nothing was achieved. Whereas a devotee also has to work hard. We work as hard as the non-devotees, right? But we achieve the ultimate benefit. It was the non-devotees, they get nothing at the end. Right? They just leave a corpse behind. Right? And nothing is taken with them to the next life. Whereas with the devotee, right, Krishna says, Nehabhigrama nashosti prachabayona vijite swalpam. Swalpa means, alpa means very small. Even you do a little service for Krishna, but you get unlimited benefit. So you have to work hard in this material world. You cannot escape. But if we work hard for Krishna, we get unlimited benefit. If we work hard for Maya, we just get kicked in the face. One more verse. In human society, there are various activities performed for the protection of one's wealth and life. by one's words, one's mind, and one's actions, but they are all performed for one's personal or extended sense gratification with reference to the body. All these activities are baffled because of being separate from devotional service. But when the same activities are performed for the satisfaction of the Lord, the beneficial results are distributed to everyone, just as water poured on the root of a tree is distributed throughout the entire tree. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So next week, on Monday, 7 o'clock, we will have the closed book exam. We'll say at the moment it's here in the theatre. If there's any change, we'll update you by email during the week. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.